woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Well, welcome back, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly, with Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures down 50 cents. 50 cents. Futures down 49, NASDAQ Futures up 27. So we're slow and mixed after the big sell-off yesterday, although we did finish higher than we were midday, but still was pretty good or pretty bad sell-off, depending on whether you were long or short. Kevin, how are you?
I like to think I'm long.
I don't know about that. Might have to have an independent opinion on that. But then, thank God, some of those ladies are not so good on math. You know, just what they say. Just what happens. You know, whatever. The speaking of ladies, I was. Well, I was going to do a nice baseball story first, but I'll just kind of wander into this rant here. Is the lady who is the grandmother of the two young girls that got shot, and one of whom died, said these people are animals. I'm not going to be my quote. I'm going to say it was hers. Last night, just as contributor show and my significant other Audrey was driving home last night, some other lady on the Dan Ryan got caught between two carloads of animals shooting each other and got killed. Kevin, this has got to stop. And I don't care if we need to, I'm not for capital punishment, but I wouldn't mind opening up the territorial prison in Yuma, and when somebody does that, they just disappear and we never see them again back here. I'm over it. I mean, I'm all for, you know, but at some point, I don't care if Hitler's mother didn't love him. I mean, I just want him out of here. I mean, I'm at that point. I mean, this is crazy. Or where am I wrong here?
To so callously have no value for another life is, it's hard to relate to that, but it is evil.
And
I don't know any other way to put it other than that you're just talking about evil at some point. And, you know, this is, unfortunately, it isn't just that it exists because it has for a long time, and this has been a problem for a long time. Now, however, we've just decided not to prosecute a lot of it.
Well,
that's a problem.
One of the ladies who, an African-American lady who was, worked on the she had worked on the floor, I think. Well, it's a long time ago. And then she worked for us. And there had been a few African-American ladies that were on the trading floor with badges on, but just about all of them were brokers that worked for firms. I can still remember them. It was, you know, couldn't have been a better bunch in the world. But I think Sharon worked for us, was the first market maker, African-American lady market maker on the floor. And I'm proud to say that our firm put her on the floor, and she did very nicely until there was no floor anymore. By the way, Sharon has a record that will never be broken, Maddie and Kevin. She's the leading scorer in history for Angel Guardian Gym, and the school is closed.
There you go.
So that will never be broken.
Pretty nice.
Yeah.
I would definitely want the plaque that, you know, before they tear everything down. I would want that plaque for my home.
Oh, yeah.
Home.
I bet she didn't get it, but Sharon was the Lady Charles Barkley. She got a bump in the end and turn around and do a fade away, and you couldn't touch it. Even I couldn't. But she had went through the foster care, you know, parents were a problem, didn't live with the parents for a while, the whole routine. And you know what? She was fine. She wouldn't take a dime off the richest man in the world. She is a terrific person. So it's not just, it's not a fait accompli because your family has a problem that all of a sudden you get to do whatever you want. And somehow or another, that has entered the vernacular here. And I don't get that, Kevin. I mean, I was talking to my attorney buddies last night. We're up to like two jury trials a week. The judges are working 2 days a week or three. What is going on here? This is insane world. And we've got the COVID coming back. And everybody knows people that have it. But my small scientific study is, if you had the vaccine, the Pfizer one, it's a bad cold. If you didn't, it's worse than that. But I don't know of anybody in the hospital that I know of. But there are people in hospitals, obviously. I see hospitals whining about how they're overrun, and one in Florida has 200 COVID people out of 1,300 beds. How is that overrun? I mean, it's more than normal, but... I mean, I'm not saying every hospital is. I'm sure some are overrun.
Because it isn't a numerical accounting; it's a political accounting.
Evidently, but what are we going to do here? I mean, how many more? I keep thinking that one of these days there's going to be one of these incidents that's so egregious that people are just going to say enough. And I don't. I mean, with the mob era, that and virtually all history, of course, none of us were here. Even Webby was getting older. None of us were here, but the St. Valentine's Day massacre, finally the society said enough. We can't put up with this. And it was nothing like now. At least they only shot the other no good nicks. But how callous can we be, Kevin? I mean, we're so callous to the victims, I can't even go there.
Well, and also, you know, I mean, again, consider how agendas figure into this. When the police officer was shot, a week or so ago, the reporters went to great pains to say that the gun that was used to shoot her was acquired in Indiana. Now, on the other hand, you have people with drive-bys using fully automatic weapons and spraying, you know, and anybody who's in the way gets hammered, can be a victim. And not one person is saying, where are they getting automatic weapons?
No.
Because you can't get those in Indiana. You know, you can't buy them legally in Indiana, so that's not it. The answer to that, by the way, is they're coming across the border with drug cartels. As part of the selling drugs, so you know, but we can't possibly report on that because
what do you mean? I have two people.
Border control is a bad issue for them,
Kevin. In the last 6 months, I know two people that have ordered them through the mail and gotten them. Now they're not fully automatic
weapons.
No, but you can get them redone to that.
There's
I'll bet you I could find somebody. Besides, the semi-automatic...
Well, I bet you could find somebody to do it illegally.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You find someone to build you one illegally.
No, what I'm saying, I've had one person showed me the gun, and the other person showed me a picture. We're talking about serious, educated people of... I don't think they were AK. What's the other one? There's two of them. One's the AK, it wasn't one of those. What's the other one? I don't know anything about these things. There's another semi-automatic thing. I couldn't believe how light it was. The entire gun is... I thought those things would be like, you know, 30 pounds. They're not. The whole gun is like a lightweight plastic that you can easily, like, carry if you wanted to. And only the metal parts are like the barrel and something else. What is it? One's the AK. What's the other one, Matty?
AR-15?
Yeah, the AR-15 these were.
AR-15 is not a fully automatic weapon.
I know, but it you can make it into one. And plus, it'll shoot pretty damn fast. I don't know. There's that much difference.
Well, Okay, and so you're going to complain about that, but you have nothing to say about then semi-automatic pistols.
I'm not.
The reason people single out the AR-15 is because it looks scary.
Well, if I ever got a gun, I'd try and find a Colt Peacemaker. So where does that put me?
You're going to jail.
A Luddite. Serious Luddite. So do we have to get Matty Weber a bodyguard now? He doesn't even know why. So this is how immune he's become to world news, and he's our news guy. Matty reported.
Okay, why are we getting Matty a bodyguard?
Well, he reported last week that the U.S. had beaten China in the medal count. China is now outraged for people like him.
Yeah,
reporting.
We know that's not true.
Because you're just not counting right. We did not count Hong Kong and Taiwan. Or not we, Matty did not count. Let's leave ourselves out of this and say this was purely a Weber report.
We might have to cut Matty loose here because, I don't know if our Chinese sponsorship is going to survive this particular incident.
Plus, I don't want to be collateral damage. I hate to lose Webby, but I'd really not want to be collateral damage while he goes down. I go down.
He won't be. He'll just be disappeared.
Oh, he'll just go?
Yeah, I'll be just vanished.
Well, where did he go? Where did Webby go? Remember the Star Trek episode where the nasty Kirk had the thing in his room where he just could hit the button and the guy would be walking along and all of a sudden he'd just disappear? That's not bad.
Yeah, well, he's going to go hang out with Jimmy Lai.
God. Hey, I do have this one here, though, for you gentlemen, you mavens. Let's switch to something more fun. Well, but speaking of fun, I hope that guy on the A's is okay. This morning it seemed like he was going to be. He got hit by the line drive. Did you see
it? Yeah, sounded like it. But, there's two kinds of okay. There's okay and healthy, which I think I'm very hopeful is the case with him. There is also okay, and I can walk back out on the mound and not have the effects of this linger with me and affect the way I pitch.
Well, when I heard that his eye is not in danger, I felt a lot better this morning. But you can, if you break your ocular bone, you can lose brain fluid, which is a problem. A lot of bad stuff can happen, but I'm really happy that his eye's okay.
Yep, I agree.
All right, here's
When we were talking about it last night, it's not just that's serious. It's not just that they can break anything. You could be looking at cracked skull. You could be looking. It could kill them.
Oh sure.
And that was just that was really nasty, and you can tell he got the Lawrence Taylor reaction. One of his teammates immediately just took a look and started waving to the side to get out there. That's when I say the Lawrence Taylor reaction. It's when he hit
Joe Theismann.
Got Joe Theismann.
Yeah.
And broke his leg in two. And immediately Lawrence Taylor, he wasn't on his feet, for more than a tenth of a second before he was already screaming to get somebody over there.
Actually, I don't want to get on this road, but the worst injury. I never knew exactly what happened until later. The worst injury I ever saw in football was a Napoleon McCollum, the halfback for the real high.
Yeah, he was. He was from the Naval Academy, and he played for the Raiders, didn't he?
Yeah, he was in a pileup, and somebody came out of the pileup and waved people, and they didn't move anybody on the pile until the doctors told, okay, you can move. Okay, you can move. I don't know what happened to his leg, whether it totally got bent back the wrong way or something, but they had to do like three or four surgeries that night just to get the blood supply. It must have like torn an artery. Was that bad? Just to get the blood supply and the nerve working before they even began to think about ligaments and everything else. Really, really awful. The guy in the Bears was almost that bad, and nobody even hit him, the tight end. He finally retired.
Zach something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember, yeah.
And he didn't even, nobody hit him.
I can't remember the guy's name, but I know who you're talking
about. But they didn't even let people leave the pile until they said, okay, you're not affecting it. And I never saw that.
Zach Miller was his name.
Yeah. All right, here's a question for you guys, especially for Mr. Weber. Mr. Stat, and he hates it when I say that. Who is the best pitcher in baseball history and why?
The best pitcher in baseball history?
And why? Now, this guy, Mike Jones, who writes for this court, he's Mr. War. He's a He's over 30 years in the technology industry, and he loves baseball, so you can only imagine what we're going to hear here. But it's very interesting to listen to the guy. Let me know to read him. And this goes back
Well, are you going back to the Cy Young days, or are you talking about modern days?
Does all that. Define best. As six fans, you'll probably get seven answers, which is probably true.
Yeah, because I would always... I always thought, you know, Babe Ruth was considered the best offensive player of all time, and Cy Young was the best pitcher of all time, when you talk about all time. Now, if you're talking, like, post-World War II modern era, which a lot of people do, then it's probably up for debate, and I wouldn't even know who to say.
Well, he says, personally...
Sandy Koufax, maybe? Or?
Personally, I rule out anyone who played most or all of their career before 1900 because the game was simply so different. I would agree with that. Because I look skeptically at dead ball era pitchers because the game was still pretty different. Then pitchers racked up enormous inning totals. Clearly there was something very different about the game in 1905 to 1925. I would also agree with that, wouldn't you guys? Because
so
I would
does that remove Cy Young and like Walter Johnson and guys
yeah,
like
I'm
that?
I'm getting to that.
All right.
I also become a bit skeptical about the era adjustments used to compare dead ball statistics to later ones. Evidently there's people that adjust all these stats to supposedly make up for the difference. Is that the deal?
Doable.
Yeah. Anyway, the best total war was Walter Johnson, 1907 to 1927, 151.6. Best total war in the live ball era. I didn't know there was such a thing as the integration era. That's evidently post, what's his name?
Jackie Robinson.
Jackie Robinson.
How do you forget Jackie Robinson's name?
I wasn't going to forget it. I forget it quick enough while I'm thinking of something else, but I would have thought about it by
now.
It's
like forgetting George Washington's name.
I understand. Hey, when you get to my age, you forget it for a second. Let's just say there's a little more stuff in the computer to access than maybe you
fair
have.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I'm just
I didn't criticize you for getting Zach Miller's name.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's so odd. People have different way. That's why Dr. J and I were so good together on the show. Because he remembered everybody's name, and I remembered the rest of the article. And he would forget the substance and always remember the name. And I'd remember the substance and have no idea what the name was. So the two of us were a great pair. He'd say, I'd talk about some article, and he goes, well, it's this guy. And I go, yeah, you're right. What's that guy? Anyway, talk about two different ways of remembering stuff. But anyway, they now call it the integration era, which I guess is, you know, a good way to do it.
That's fine. Yep.
The best total wall live ball era, not suspected of PED use, is Lefty Grove, 1925 to 1941. Best total war integration era, not suspected of PD use. Well, this is an integration era. Tom Seaver, 106, hotly pursued by Greg Maddux and Randy Johnson. But now this gets into what Maddie's always talking about, or once in a while talks about. But a lot of people think that best means peak value. And I have a fair bit of sympathy for that argument. So that's what, who's Jaws? Somebody invented, some must be some guy who does a stance. Uses a War 7. You ever heard of that, Manny?
I have heard of it, but I haven't really looked much into it.
Well, it's a measure of the player's seven best years, not necessarily consecutive.
Yeah, so it's like finding the median, right?
Well, you cut out Willie Mays' last 4 years or something.
Well, yeah, you cut out your.
It's like doing a student's grade by throwing out the best and the worst test.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Right. Best WAR 7, post 1900. Roger Clemens, 65.9. Walter Johnson and Pete Alexander had careers across 1920, but their seven best year by WARs were all before. Their seven best year before 1920, so that knocks them out of the box. So then this guy's complaining about he doesn't like if they weren't consecutive, how can they be a real peak? Now there's two arguments there. You could have 7 years where you had one crummy year, you might have been hurt, and they should still count. And he's saying, well, if it's your best seven consecutively, they should just take it, and whatever you get, you get. So anyway, so here we go. The five-year peak. So he's using a five-year peak. Five-year peak, dead ball era, Walter Johnson, Ed Walsh, Pete Alexander, Cy Young, Christy Mathewson. All right. I don't know any of those people, but I guess I'll
I knew two of them.
Well, I mean, I know the names. I mean, it's not like we ever saw him pitch. Five-year peak, live ball era. Lefty Grove, he was 1929 to 1933. Randy Johnson, 98 to 2002. Pedro Martinez, 97 to 2001. Bob Gibson, 68-72. Roger Clemens, 86-90. Sandy Koufax, 62-66. Greg Maddux, 92-96. Tom Seaver, 71-75. I don't think I would argue with any of those people being like really good.
Did you say Koufax?
I wouldn't either.
Koufax was number
one. All great pitchers, and many of whom I had the joy of seeing live.
Yeah, me too.
Or the pain of seeing live.
I never saw Martinez
against my team.
I never saw Lefty Grove. I never saw Martinez. But now that's the 5-year peak. Now, if you go the 7-year peak, dead ball era, you got Johnson, Alexander, Walsh, Christian Matheson, Cy Young. 7-year peak live ball average, you got Lefty Grove still on top. Roger Clemens, two. Pedro Martinez, Greg Maddux, Randy Johnson, Tom Seaver, Bob Gibson. Gaylord Perry, now there's a name. 1970 to 1976. I don't know if I would have guessed that. I guess Sandy Koufax is number nine, because evidently Koufax's 5 years was way better than his seven. So he didn't
pitch that long either.
No, he retired when he was 32 or something.
Yeah, which is why he's never in the top WAR rankings, because he doesn't have the longevity.
Now he's biased against dead ball pitchers, so he'd probably rank them Lefty Grove, Pedro Martinez, in a tie with Roger Clemens and Randy Johnson. Not sure I would argue with any of that. However,
well, I love the Randy Johnson one, especially because he pitched right in the heart of the steroid era when guys were hitting 65, 70 home runs, and he was still dominant.
Yep. Well, no matter how hard you swing, you still got to hit it.
Yep. But yet those guys weren't striking out like they do today.
But then he makes his,
they weren't striking out because they could shorten the swing and still hit the ball out of the park.
That's a good point.
Well, that's true. One special mention, this side where you go from 7 years to 5 years, probably our favorite guy, Kevin. One special mention, though, during the period from June 1st to July 31st, 1968, Bob Gibson batted 182, 300, 303. This is him batting. The league batted 167, 209, 190 against him because he started 12 games.
He out-hit
his opponents by batting 182.
Yeah, well, but he had, and the other guys had bad one. He started 12 games in a 2-month period, won all 12, pitched 12 complete games, pitched 8 shutouts, hit a one earned run average. So his point is there's never been anybody more dominant for 2 months than Bob Gibson.
I bet Arrieta's 2 months is not at that level, but it's got to be like in the top five.
It's got to be real close.
That he had in 2015.
Oh, yeah. I thought he was about as dominant. I never saw anybody. Well, they didn't have the same kind of camera work for Gibson. So you really couldn't see that much what the ball was. They had a center field camera. Yeah. It wasn't like now. And a lot of times, the camera was behind the catcher's shoulder. So you really couldn't. I thought Arrieta, he was like a Greg Maddux to me. But faster. He would like throw the ball right down the middle, pretty friggin' hard, and it would move to the corner one way or the other. It would like move to the edge. It started up down the middle and ended up unhittable. I never saw anything like that, where he had movement within the strike zone like that.
I obviously wasn't around for the Gibson stretch, but the Arrieta stretch for 2 months in 2015, the second half, was the best I've ever seen from any pitcher.
But you never got.
I think he had a sub-1 ERA, and I don't think he took a loss during that stretch. I mean, and like you said, it was he threw a no-hitter. He threw like 4 or 5 games where he had 8 to 12 strikeouts. I mean, he was just unhittable.
Well, I'm really disappointed there.
Yeah, he was. He was absolutely outstanding. The thing I'll say for Gibson, having seen him pitch, I don't know how many times, but quite a few. Is that when you saw Gibson pitch, you just sat there and said, so many times during the game, wow.
I bet.
where did that come from? He had this, just badass curve. But he'd also, he'd sit there and throw fast the whole game. And then when he got into a game situation or he was, he had to close out an inning and he was pitching against a Billy Williams or somebody that good, and all of a sudden out would come this fastball like he hadn't thrown the whole game.
He had the extra gear.
How would you hit that?
Well, again, when the people you go and see, and I don't think he belongs on this list, but I'll tell you what, I saw 1 year, I don't know why, but I always saw the Phillies. It was the year that they had the horrible year. Steve Carlton, I thought, was unbelievable to watch. I mean, he was this big, mean guy. Boy, he wasn't as mean as Gibson. And people had no chance against the dude. I mean, I mean, I don't think his career was as good because then he learned the slider. He claims that Bob Gibson taught him how to sort of slider, and once he did, he was lights out. But when you watched him and you say, this guy's different. And there's so many players, and all of a sudden you watch one person, you say, this guy's different. It's like watching Ozzie Smith play shortstop. You know, I mean, there's a million really good shortstops, but not Ozzie Smith. I mean, when you get to that level for somebody to be that much better, it's just like, how can they even be that way? You know, there's a million halfbacks. There's only one.
And those guys do stand out, don't they? I mean, yeah. I remember telling you about watching Eloy Jimenez at Class A. And you just watch the game and go, well, he's not like everybody else. We got to get you guys over to a Cubs game. Their best players are at, or many of their best players are at South Bend, so we should probably get you over there to see a game.
I'd love to do that.
If South Bend played the team up here, who wins?
Good question.
Close call. They're a high Class A team, so they probably wouldn't win, but they might.
High A versus Triple A is essentially what the Cubs are fielding right now, so they could compete.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is funny when you watch really at any sport, somebody who you would think you reach the top of the pyramid, that everybody's kind of equal. I remember watching, I'd heard about this tackle, Willie Rolfe. I'd never seen him. The Bears, whoever he played for, the Bears had, like, never really played him. And so it was like a Monday night game. And I go, I'm going to watch this guy.
I remember him. He played for New Orleans, didn't he?
But somehow or another, I never. And then all of a sudden, he's playing national TV. Because New Orleans was lousy for a while. And I'm sitting, I want to watch this guy, like, in about 10 plays. This big, huge guy. He's got the small pads on. And no matter where the defensive end went, he was in front of him. And he just, like, extend his arm and push the guy away like he was a baby. And I'm like, he's just this big monster man with huge arms. He never even like, nailed the guy like a regular blocker. And the guy just didn't go anywhere. He just, wherever he went, he was in front of him. I'm like, who is this guy? he's a lot like this guy the Bears just signed that they think is over his career.
Jason Peters.
Yeah, who's just a monster man, right?
He was 12-year pro, like probably a Hall of Famer. I think 9-time All-Pro, something like that, but he's, you know, 39 now.
But isn't he like 6'7 or something and like 330? I mean,
he's
huge.
Gigantic, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'll bet the guy never lowers a shoulder in anybody, maybe on a running play. He just stands there and flicks them off with his arms like they're nothing.
You have quick enough feet and you're strong, yeah. All you have to do is get in the way and then give a guy a shove.
Yeah, well, that's the S&P futures down 450 and NASDAQ futures up 12. Talk a little about what's going on in the economy. We come back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. but I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as they do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. He's Mr. Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill calling in from, where are we? Southwest Michigan. And we were talking sports, so we're going to talk some market here a little bit. We have the S&P futures down 4, NASDAQ futures up 10. Remember yesterday we were down heavy, even though we came back a little bit on the close. We've got the Dow down 74 here this morning. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 14. That's 0.1%, kind of quiet there, too. FTSE down 22.3%. CAC around down 26.4%. Over in Asia, we've had nothing but problems here in terms of the markets heading south. They're heading south again today. They're up today. They were down huge yesterday, down like 2% across the board. Nikkei up 161.6%, Shanghai up 38.1%, so they made back about half of that. Hang Seng up 121.4%. That's not half of what they were down. The Federal Reserve Bank of New Zealand keeps rates unchanged. There's a big piece of news, right, Manny? I don't think that means anything to anybody. This is yesterday. The Dow was down 282. It was down, I think, over 5 at one point. S&P was down 31. It was down 55. NASDAQ was down 137. It was down over 200. Bonds, positive basis point to 1.27, but basically quiet in this upper 1.2-something range. The Bund, minus a basis point to minus 0.48. Japan, still positive, but by the skin of something, 0.006 positive. We've got oil. Hey, up 85 cents, 67.44. Finally, it's 1%. Brent up 95 cents, 69.98. Natural gas up 2 cents, 3.86. RBOB up a penny to 2.18. We've got gold down 2.50, 17.85. Still struggling to get that 1800 number. Can't quite get there. Silver up a penny to 23.67. Copper down 2 cents, 4.17. And Bitcoin down 5.30, but still 44,965. So it's down like 2,000 from yesterday morning. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a pretty bad crash on the southbound Bishop Ford just before 159th Street. A car overturned and caught on fire, and the fire has now been put out, so that's good news. But IDOT's on the scene, and congestion is starting to build up significantly on the outbound Bishop Ford. So keep that in mind if you're heading outbound on I-94 on the south side near 159th Street. As it's going to be a while to get that all cleared up. But everything else is all quiet. No issues on the inbound side. Dan Ryan, I-57 are all quiet. Same for the Stevenson. Traffic starting to build on the Eisenhower, but still pretty quick into downtown. Edens and Kennedy are looking great. Weather today, clouds early, then some sunshine later on, a high of 82. Right now it's overcast and 74 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 94 today. Right now it's clear and 83. In sports, the White Sox had no problems with Oakland last night, winning 9-0, but that was not the story of the game, as A's ace pitcher Chris Bassitt was hit with a Brian Goodwin line drive in the second inning, just underneath his eye, that had him carted off the field and sort of changed the whole complexion of the game. Most of the guys didn't even want to finish playing after that, as you can probably imagine. But Chris Bassett's in stable condition. There seems to be no issue with the eye outside of having to get stitches on his face. And we'll know more today. But a scary moment last night. But White Sox took care of business, winning 9-0. They're back to 20 games above 500. The Cubs snapped their 12-game losing streak. It took Kyle Hendricks throwing a gem as they beat the Reds 2-1 last night in Cincinnati. Diamondbacks topped the Phillies 3-2. Chief.
Your buddy Steve Stone was all over Hendricks and the year he's having and basically the horse bleep team he's on. It's almost like a Carlton year. You guys put 14-5?
Yeah, he's had a good year from a win-loss perspective. His ERA is around 4, which is a little higher than what he's used to, but he's really just had 3 really, really bad outings that have skewed his ERA. If you took those 3 terrible outings out, he's got his sparkling 2.5 type ERA. And, yeah, he's been good all year.
Didn't he have a game in April where he didn't make it out of the first inning?
He had 2 games in April, both against the Braves, where they thought maybe the Braves were onto something, tipping his pitches or something. And he got shelled in both of those games. And then he got shelled in his last start against the Brewers, where he gave him a ton of runs. And those 3 outings just completely skewed his ERA. But it's, you know, still right around 4, which is not elite by any means and not as good as Kyle is capable of, as we've seen, but still solid. But yeah, if you took those 3 outings out, he's basically having a normal Kyle Hendricks year.
Well, good for him.
And good news for the Cubs was getting a 2-inning save out of Cody Hoyer last night. He was really good.
That's the guy they got from the Sox, right?
Yeah. And they need, you know, Cody Hoyer to be really good, and they need Nicky Two Strikes. I'm like Tom, Matt. Help me fill in the last name.
Which guy?
Madrigal.
Oh, yeah, Nick Madrigal. I think he will be really good.
They need him to be a good ball player, too.
Yeah, I think Nick Madrigal will be really good. He's a contact guy that they need. If Horner can play shortstop like they think he can, then you have 2 pretty good kind of speedy contact guys that can hit 300 that ideally you would put at the top of your order, and that's something they really haven't had in a while. Which would be interesting. Yeah.
And Madrigal needs his defense needs work.
His defense is not very good, and Horner would not be considered a plus shortstop. So it would hurt your defense big time up the middle with those 2 guys, but it would help your offense. So I don't know what you would do. I also think, you know, Wisdom and Frank Schwindel guy are guys to take longer looks at, because they both had really good years, and maybe they're pieces that you can not necessarily be your core, but could be everyday players or solid contributors. So there's some things you can take out of this year that you can build on for next year.
Got to give
Wisdom
away.
Wisdom was a really high draft pick, and the Cardinals gave up on him. So, you know, he may be like an Arrieta, where you get a lot out of him because the talent was there all along. He just never put it together until it was much later.
The guy that they got rid of that they had last year, he's having a banner year for Cincinnati now that he's back off the DL. What's his name, the guy?
Oh, Castellanos? Yeah, he's, you know what, he wasn't that expensive. He was a guy they should have been able to keep.
I agree. He's had basically back-to-back MVP caliber seasons with Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And had an MVP caliber second half with the Cubs when they had him for 2 months.
Yeah, well, he's my favorite kind of hitter anyway. You know, I like power. It's nice when guys hit home runs, but the guys that hit a ton of doubles are the guys who are most valuable. They'll get their home runs too, but the doubles tells me that they're using the whole field and they're getting the bat on the ball a lot. And you know, what did Castellanos end up between Detroit and Chicago that one year? Would he end up with like 55 doubles or 60 doubles, something obnoxiously high?
Yeah, he led the league. I remember that year. And it looked like between the 2 teams, he had 58 doubles, which is just ridiculous. Then his first year in Cincinnati, he followed that up with, let's see here.
Hey, didn't Mark Grace used to have an inordinate amount of doubles every year?
Yeah, he did.
He did. He led the 90s in extra base hits, I believe, or something like that. At 2020... let's see here. It looks like in 2020 he must have been injured because he only had 11 doubles in 2020, which I don't remember that. But then 2021 he's bounced back. He already has 30 doubles on his way to, you know, another 40 plus double season.
That's right. He spent time on the injured list too, so that's kind of gotten into his total.
But yeah, he's a gap to gap hitter. He takes a lot of walks. He doesn't strike out a ton compared to, you know, some power hitters. I mean, he strikes out a lot compared to different eras, but in this era, he doesn't strike out a ton. He plays an okay left field. He's not, you know, or right field. He's not a great outfielder, but he's serviceable.
Yeah, he came with the reputation, though, that he was a bad outfielder, and he really, I don't think he was.
I agree. Yeah, this year he's batting .317 with a .376 OBP. So he's hitting for average, but he also takes a lot of walks. And he's got 30 doubles so far.
And he's playing on a team that has other guys that can hit.
Not really. I mean...
Well, he's got Votto.
He's got Votto, who's... You're right about Votto. He's having a resurgent year, which is crazy at his age. But Suarez, who is their best hitter over the last 5 years, has had his worst year he's ever had.
Yeah, what happened to him?
I don't know. He's completely dropped off. But yeah, Castellanos, that's a guy that was... You know, really sad when they lost him. And he's got 21 home runs this year to go along with the 30 doubles. So, just a monster year.
Hey, I want to shift gears here a little bit because we actually have, we had a big sell-off yesterday. People concerned about that, obviously, listening to the show. And we, Caston Drone is, can't get this, can't get that. Kevin, you sent that article in. And as everybody knows, my big theme really almost, not just on the show, but almost in life, is that everything depends on everything else and everybody else. And I don't know if that, I mean that to a certain extent anyway. And I wonder, Kevin, when all these supply chain issues, I mean, I've been more than just talking about it, to be perfectly blunt, I've been really ragging about the demise of the small and medium business. And, you know, to where we end up with the, almost this bureaucratic, you know, bigger operations doing things their way and it's harder and harder for somebody to fill the gap whenever there's a supply issue. I mean, they can't get the funding. Dodd-Frank to me should be torn up tomorrow. I mean, I don't know what the story is with that. Let the banks be banks. It's not like they don't go out once in a while anyway. And if they get in trouble, you take care of it. That's what the Federal Reserve is all about. And they should be taking some risk, and they shouldn't have a regulator over their shoulder every time they give somebody a loan. That's their business, in my opinion. But anyway, we of course deal with regulation here at a securities firm, and as you can tell, I'm always kind of on edge about that anyway because I think it's absurd. But anyway, how much, Kevin, is my basically ranting and raving about how difficult it is to be a small or medium-sized business, and all of a sudden, let's say after the Trump administration and maybe Biden's still doing some, but let's say we kicked between COVID and the Chinese, we kicked a few pieces off the chessboard when it comes to supply and stuff. And again, I just try and imagine for a second. I mean, it's hard for me to do in this, but I've been studying this my whole life. Try and imagine for a second what the entire organism that is our economy looks like. How complex, how many different people are involved. When you talk about a plane, and that's I mean, a plane, obviously the biggest thing, or a ship, or even a car.
Go with a car.
Yeah, you're talking thousands of parts. Some Ford makes, you know, internally, a lot of them not. This person makes this. You got a guy making one of our buddies, well, you remember him, one of my buddies in high school, Dave Azzarello, his uncle had the patent on the dome light. And they manufactured the dome light cover for people. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of this stuff around. And then you throw, financing problems at smaller people. You throw all kinds of impediments for small firms into the mix, mostly financing. I mean, where all of a sudden now the guy's got to give up his house for a normal loan. Not give up his house, sign his house. Make it harder and harder and harder for this kind of stuff to happen. Then you have the Chinese somewhat fill the void. Then you kick the rug out from that one. I'm not saying we should have or shouldn't have. I'm just saying whoever did it, read Trump, had absolutely no idea of what he was doing to the economy. I'm not saying he shouldn't have done it at all. Matter of fact, I kind of agreed with the sentiment. But has no idea what he was doing if you take five pieces out of the mix and make it an automobile. Well, it's okay. It's only the seats. How the hell you can drive your car without the seat, Donald? I mean, I know I'm being a little facetious here, But now, and then you throw a pandemic on top of it, where you close these places for months, and all of a sudden we're stunned. We have a problem, Kevin. Why are we stunned?
Well, it wasn't. It was part closing those places. It was also, clogging the ports, which were the source of things coming into the country from overseas. So people who were counting on, getting parts, whether it's China, Vietnam, Malaysia, it doesn't matter what your Far Eastern source was, that if you were getting your materials from there or you're getting parts from there, your boats were sitting 30, 40 days waiting to get into the port of Long Beach or the port of Los Angeles. And that was pandemic related as well because, A, a lot of people were sent home, and B, that people who were working, they were shorthanded because every time someone tested positive, they not only sent that person home, but as a contact tracing matter, they would send anybody else who worked with them home. So we had all kinds of madness there. I know I've said this on Stocks and Jocks before, but if you get one supply chain out of whack, it affects others, of course, but if you just have to remedy that one, it still takes a lot of time. When they're all out of whack and they affect each other, it's going to take a very long time. And that's our problem when it comes to that. And you mentioned an article. I just want to share a couple of things. It wasn't actually an article. It was my students, because I have this online logistics class, and so this is some comments from students all around the state of Indiana. One guy says the company I'm working for supplies Ford, GM, and Chrysler and Toyota. We had a very slow start to the year with the chip shortage, lots of plants down for months at a time. Now the demand has increased so much that we are not able to keep up with production. This is called the bullwhip effect, if you sort of think of cracking the bullwhip, what those waves look like. Another one, I'm working in the automotive industry as a supplier for GM. We have several customers that were down at the same time due to the chip shortage. The automotive companies were ordering and then canceling their orders with us continuously. Then when they start back up, we couldn't keep up. They couldn't make up their minds either. We would lay staff off for 2 days, and 2 days later bring them back because we had orders all of a sudden. And then one guy who's a purchasing manager, and he said his biggest struggles over the last year and a half is guessing the lead time. Sometimes a 2 week lead time changes to 3 to 4 months with a price increase. So, this is what's going on in the world, and these mostly are that medium-sized type of business. They're scuffling to adapt. They're probably in some ways more nimble and more able to adapt. But the real solutions to some of this get into sourcing parts back in the U.S. or within the boundaries of USMCA, where you can have more reliable supply chains. But that requires capital expenditures and goes back to what you said about lending, that, can they get their hands on the funds to make this work? Because if you can start making more stuff here, then you aren't going to be subject to these swings next time there is some kind of international event or, whatever it is that is very disruptive.
Well, Kevin, it's the...
And chips, chips, getting a chip factory up and running is a years-long process.
Oh, yeah, I'm not talking about that.
So, that on its own is a completely separate issue because that one, almost all chips are made in Taiwan. And by one or two companies, so it's a little that's its own kind of crazy reliance on a single source.
But Kevin, the world I knew, or at least thought was around in the U.S. is, and I'm going to pick on Matty Weber, bright guy. Somehow you hear about. Be it over shots and beers or whatever, hey, we're this seat company for F-150s that Ford's been using for years, all of a sudden is using slave labor, or they did something, or they're going to be out of business. And I sit there and go, wait a minute, I have a facility that's making whatever, bicycle seats. Maybe we don't have those anymore. Something even remotely similar. And I go, I got a couple engineers that if I give them the assignment on Monday morning, by Tuesday, if you gave them the drawing, we can have the metal frame subcontracted out, because it's, what is it? It's tubes and a metal harness of some kind with padding basically and stuff on top of it, right? I can envision what the seat looked like on a railroad car, and it's got to be pretty close to the same. We're talking, there's people that could do this in their sleep, Kevin. I mean, engineers at these firms that used to make this kind of stuff. Oh, we can have your seat, you know, specced out and have in like 2 or 3 weeks. And there's going to be a guy who makes the tubes for the side frame, and there's going to be guys that make the whatever the piece that go across. And we're going to find a guy that in 3 weeks can come, or a month can come up with the velour up top or the leather or whatever. Kevin, this is in America. This is not difficult, making a friggin' car seat. And somebody's going to go to the bank and say, okay, we got to upgrade this plant. And by the way, the total cost of the deal, then you get it to some schmuck like me who costs the whole thing out and says, okay, we got to go borrow $20 million. And you go to somebody with your plan, and somebody comes up with $2 million starter money. And this is a treat. I'm not saying that you're going to start spitting out 1,000 seats a day at the end of 3 months, but this is not difficult, Kevin. These are friggin' seats. I mean,
but you do have to match the labor cost of foreign production. It's labor cost plus shipping, essentially.
All right, so you pick up a bunch on the shipping.
That's cheaper than the cost of making it here, then people are going to make it here. How do you beat that? Well, you beat it, you know, with an automated process where the marginal cost of making anything is much lower. The problem is, one, how long are you willing to take to recapture that investment so that you can have competitive pricing? And part two is three parts. And part two is, can you get the financing for it? And then part three, I guess, is there a willingness in the name of a stable supply chain for some companies to accept a little bit higher price, knowing they're not going to get disrupted, which is the infinite game type of thinking that is just barely starting to take hold now.
I got news for you, my friend. If you've priced a pickup in the last 5 years, it's probably gone from top end $50,000 to $100,000. They can pay an extra $50 for the seat.
Yeah, but the question is, will they?
Well, rather than not sell the pickup, which they're not doing right now.
There's beginning to be a realization. Let me put it this way. If you had... If an auto manufacturer right now said, I have to pay three times as much to get my hand on all the chips that I need to complete my process here and to compete, they'd do it in a heartbeat.
Well,
but they're learning this lesson the hard way.
Well, you're absolutely talking about as things go forward, you not only have to have the seat plant that comes out with the one, they got to be competitive. I mean, I get that part. What I'm saying is, These are items that is how our economy works, and I think people don't get the basics. The basics is people like you and me and the listeners sit there and go, wow, these people are walking 500 yards from the train station to get a cup of coffee. If I could get a place where it's only 50 feet, I think I could sell one hell of a lot of coffee. You don't need government to tell you that. That's our system. That person should be able to get a lease, you know, get a loan, buy the coffee machines, get a couple people to work there and start pumping. That's how our, I mean, you don't find umbrellas available in the rain because government told a guy to go out there and sell them. We're getting ourselves screwed up here. And the more barriers we put in regular, our economy runs by somebody sees a need and moves to fill the need. And once we decide, no, you can't do it, you're not big enough, or no firm under the size of Merck or somebody can ever get things through the FDA, we screw up the whole process, Kevin. And we're seeing how screwed up it is when anytime we get a shocker, like kicking China out for a little while and getting a COVID problem. I mean, this has not been ongoing for a while. It's been harder and harder. Why don't we have a rail car manufacturer in a country? We still make rail cars, and we still need them. You know, I mean, why can't we find anybody who do the Bay Bridge that isn't from China? I mean, what are we doing to screw our people out of these things? It's not like they don't want to build it, right? I mean, or am I wrong?
Yeah, we're totally screwing ourselves. And it's a much different mindset. And we've been talking about this, you know, in philosophically for years. I mean, you go back to the, you know, Edward Deming in the 1960s talking about, you know, the problem of the short-term thinking, of worrying about the quarterly report, you know, and the cost of that. You know, that was how Japanese companies kicked our butts in automotive industry in the 80s and in the 90s in consumer electronics, and then they got hung up with their own problems and got caught by some more nimble smaller companies in their countries in their region. But this is a long-standing argument. We've just continued to make it worse. It as you have cited several times, like I like to say, how does it happen? Gradually, then suddenly.
Well, man, how do we even have it? We got like a booze shortage. How do you have a booze shortage?
Which is not tolerable. By
no,
that
is not tolerable.
I can take anything else.
Yeah, it's a.
I will not put up with a booze shortage.
Well, go over to the. Go over to the Sirius Cafe and talk to the guy who they just opened 2 weeks ago downtown, and they're not even.
And what you've described there is not necessarily a shortage. It's just that the supply chain shifted, and shifting it back takes time.
Yeah,
which is what we've been discussing. It all went to retail. It all went to packaged liquor, you know, it's not like we stopped drinking. It's just that, everything got redirected, and now the series is in the back of the line because everybody else is keeping the suppliers busy.
But we don't have to worry about it, though, because everybody now, no matter who you talk to anybody, it's, what about the Bears? We have all of a sudden now the Bears have become the opiate of the people. Karl Marx was wrong. He thought it was religion. It's really sports.
We needed it.
Yeah, we needed it.
Unless you're a Sox fan. You're having a great summer if you're a Sox fan.
Do any of the Bear fans, are they all collectively mesmerized or hypnotized at a point? Don't they realize how they just got screwed on this new game? So the Bears now have two exhibition games you got to pay for, and we're like Las Vegas gets a real game and only one exhibition game, right? Which would you rather season
tickets? Yeah, just the season ticket.
Quick question.
That is going to change every other year.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of the White Sox, are you guys? I don't know how much you watch the White Sox.
I've been watching a lot.
I wonder if you're like me. When Frank Thomas used to come up to the plate, it was like, stop what you're doing.
Yep.
You know, stop what you're doing and watch, because watching Frank Thomas bat was always just really cool. He was such a great hitter and such a disciplined hitter. I've become the same way with Eloy Jimenez.
I've always been sort of that.
Last night there was one at bat where the A's were shifted on him to the left side. And then he got two strikes on him, they moved the second baseman back to the right side of second, because they know that this guy with two strikes is going to change his mindset and use the whole field.
I've always kind of liked watching a Braves. I have a quick question. I know we're a little over, Matty, but very quick question. 1962 Polo Grounds, New York Mets. How much was the price of a box seat ticket? Upper box, maybe, probably not first row.
Upper box, $2.
Matty.
I think $2 is a pretty good guess. I'll go $2.50.
Well, the ticket actually had a price on it of $214.50. That was the season. They instead of putting the price of the season ticket on your ticket to show you were a season ticket holder. So it's 204. So what is that divided by 81 games?
215 divided by 81.
Yeah, so is
$2.65.
And of course, New York had every game had, you know, like out of the two something, it was like, you know, already was 60 cents tax.
Yeah, so
it was like $2.
So the ticket was probably right around $2, and with the fees, it was $2.65.
Yeah. But they actually had the season ticket price on the ticket, which I've never
Well, when it was that cheap, you could do that.
Well, then it showed, when you gave the ticket, it showed Matty Weber was a season ticket holder. There's a picture of it on...
You wouldn't want to do that now when it says, like, you know, 25 grand.
No. Because then they'd have a big P on it for Pigeon. S&P Futures down 225. Nasdaq Futures up 11. Back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allies, Mr. Weber on the board. S&P futures down 2, Nasdaq futures up 11. Dow futures down 64. A couple interesting earnings. Yesterday we had Home Depot earnings and the stock was down $16. Whack, whack. And in sympathy, Lowe's was down like 9. Well, now Lowe's earnings came out today and Lowe's is back up 8. So their earnings were not as bad of a... Well, actually it was the revenue in Home Depot that was a surprise to the downside that brought Home Depot down. So Home Depot is not... was sort of unchanged. It's up 75 cents, but has not made back what it lost yesterday, but Lowe's is making back pretty much what it did.
How did Home Depot disappoint? All they've done revenue. Is raise prices, and people are doing all kinds of projects.
They the stock has gone up. The stock's $321, so I mean, let's just say that they were braced for the perfect world, and we've got Target down 4.45, but Target's gone up like every day for the last whatever. It's still trading 2.50, so I wouldn't call that much of a shot. Russell, are you here, bud?
I'm here. I'm just listening. I'm gonna quote the Lowe's CEO from about 25 years ago when I covered retail stocks. I asked him what the difference between Lowe's and Home Depot was, and his instant response is, "We're Home Depot, but we're like Home Depot for women."
I like that.
Because yeah, and. I think the big difference between Home Depot, it was priced for perfection, but I feel like I've always felt like Lowe's would be more of a beneficiary to a bunch of people moving to the suburbs, and I think that's why Lowe's is holding up better than Home Depot right there.
Except I'm thinking that over the last year Home Depot has gone up higher than Lowe's.
Oh yeah,
I'm not positive on that, but
it's been outrageous, and both of them have done particularly well. But I think the reason that Lowe's, and I always liked that they reported, you know, one after the other, so you could actually see the difference. And I'm not the least bit surprised that Lowe's is doing a little bit better than Home Depot, at least over the last 3 months.
Yeah, when is
we live quarter to quarter.
Now in the Midwest, when does Menards is obviously a huge competitor here. I don't think it is outside the Midwest. Do other parts of the country have a third big box, I'll use the term, lumber store?
Not really, unless it's a regional type player, but no.
So Home Depot has 2,200 stores. Lowe's has 2,015, so a little bit less, but they have, you know, a lot of stores too. Menards only has something like 300 plus stores.
Yeah,
they'd look like, if you were talking about all the conference realignment, they would look like the footprint of one of the conferences.
Well, I think Manny.
No, really, that's how it would look.
Like the Mac.
But they are. I think
exactly.
I don't know his first name. I'm going to say Joe Menard is the richest man in Wisconsin.
Right.
And
no, he's not.
Well, that's
the Koch brothers have to be. I'm calling early morning using the internet to check that one.
Okay. Well, that's where. First of all, if I'm wrong, that's where I got it. There was a 50 state list. And if you tapped on the state, they gave you the richest. Maybe it's the richest guy in the last whatever. Because the guy in Michigan is like Hal Myers, the guy who owns the Myers stores.
I would even if they're not number one in Wisconsin, I would swap spots with them in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
I'd have to take my family and the three dogs.
I'm going to say that you and I, being the knuckleheads we are, and I'll say both of us in there, would probably find somebody that, you know, owns four square blocks in Milwaukee that actually has more money than the guy or something. But
so the top, so Chief's right on this. They don't have the they don't have the Koch brothers on here, so they must not be classified as Wisconsin. But John Menard Jr., founder of Menards, is worth $14.2 billion. He's the richest in Wisconsin. The Kohler family, which I think was that the toilets.
Ah.
Well, they would prefer to say high end kitchen and plumbing.
They're,
and
that guy's stuff. Number two.
Why would you go right down to the toilets? Just saying.
Well, that's when I hear the name Kohler, I only think of the toilets.
I think they get more for faucets and sinks and all that stuff.
Fair enough. But they don't have the logo on the sinks. They have it on all the toilets.
That's true.
Diane Hendricks is the third richest person in Wisconsin and the richest woman. She's owner of Beloit-based Hendricks Holding Company and Beloit-based ABC Supply Company.
I think Hendricks makes the trucks and everything. They're a big manufacturer, I think.
Yeah, so those are the three richest people in Wisconsin. So they, the Koch brothers, who I know are rich, like really rich, they're not on this list. So are they not Wisconsin?
I thought they were.
I thought they were too, but maybe they're not.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I find shopping in Home Depot to be an absolute nightmare. I think it's one of the it's horrible. I don't understand what people get out of it. It's hard to find anything. They have friendly staff, but it's so big, and the way it's set up, it's hard to find anything. I don't like it. I don't like going there.
Well, they went from every person working there way back in the day owning stock and being rich, basically. And everybody in the electric aisle knew what they were doing. So now they have like 1,000 employees in the place, and if no matter who you talk to, they call the same four other people that actually know something.
That's exactly right. Yeah, they got one guy that can make keys. They got one guy that knows something about something, and the rest are just people kind of roaming around hiding.
but if you find the right guy, they know everything. If you can dig him out. Because then now if I go to the place like, you know, I do, I know who the guy is and I find him and I don't bother anybody else.
There's just something about the lighting and the aisles and stuff where I find Menards a lot more shopper friendly.
But there's something weird about Menards when you go by the 2x4s and you see like a ketchup thing.
Well, that's weird, yeah. They've always done that.
But Lowe's, when you talk about, when I'm going to go on my,
you can buy barbecue sauce, overalls, and a hammer, all within 10 feet.
But on Lowe's, it's well lit. It's very nice, but they're also the paint is more expensive, but you can get a discount or as a coupon, which is so, I'll say, female oriented. Kevin says you're not supposed to use the word female anymore. Anyway, it is designed way more for women. Now Menards is designed for like a serious guy. Well, here's one of the differences. If you go into Home Depot, you get one of the big thingies, and you put your plywood on it, and you put your 2x4s, and you wheel it out the front door. Now, Menards, you go to the construction guy, and you run it all off, and you take your car, and you drive it out to this huge thing in the back.
The lumber yard in the back.
Which is massive. And you go pick your own stuff, or maybe somebody will help you, and you throw it in your truck, and it's designed like when we did all the back porches and everything. I was at Menards and I got the Suburban, so I'm throwing you know, the 8 foot long.
I went and helped a few times tying up.
Yeah.
2x4s or whatever they're called.
You know, but I mean, if you're going to load it in your truck, you're going to Menards because there's no way you're wheeling that stuff by hand out the front door at Home Depot. So, and I don't know what they do at Lowe's, but Menards gives that how they get away with this 11% discount where you got to mail a damn thing in. I've mailed it in twice and never gotten a check.
The rebate.
Yeah. And now, Home Depot, the construction thing, they don't give you a dime. But I hear at Lowe's, they actually take care of construction people. So everybody's kind of slightly different, and you sort of have to pick your spot. I wouldn't. The one on North Avenue, I don't know how many gallons of paint there. I never got a discount on paint. I was supposedly doing so much, I was getting a construction discount. Now, at the one out in Homer Glen, the ladies there that were their 50s, they were digging me. They gave me somebody else's name on the ticket. Gave me like a 30% discount. So, I mean, it kind of was where you go and the people you know. But, I mean, they're all amazingly different, aren't they, for three people kind of in the same industry? Just saying.
Yeah, they all sort of have a little bit of a niche, it seems like.
But the Lowe's is a much nicer store in terms of walking in and lighting. And
That's the women thing right there. It's the whole shopping experience. He expanded on it after saying we're like Home Depot for women. By just saying we're a much friendlier store, we're more helpful. People like Matt will feel more comfortable coming to shop at our store than the other. Sorry, I couldn't help myself on that one.
Well,
Home Depot always reminds me of one of those dreams where I'm stuck somewhere and I can't get out.
Yes, it's like a maze.
I totally know what you mean.
I'm 6'3", but it doesn't really matter much when the aisles and shelves are 40 feet high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I can't even if I wanted something, I can't get it.
Well, if you're going to buy 2 2x4s, you go to Home Depot. If you're going to buy something, not even a 2x4, you go to Lowe's. And if you want to buy 100 2x4s, you go to Menards. Well, the back, real quick, before we do, because I always go
to the neighborhood Ace, by the way.
Well, there you
I
go.
Want to keep that guy close. I
used to work at an Ace. Okay.
I do too, yeah. If I can. But I mean, you're not going to buy lumber at the Ace. But the place that Maddie used to live and I still live, it's one of the three story walk ups. Well, the posts that hold the back porch, you know, basically together, the construction posts, are 30 feet long, or they're 29 feet or something. And the last one was falling apart because you know how you slice one of them in half for like 6 feet and the other one in half for 6 feet and you kind of scab them together, Russell?
Yeah.
That's what they do to those things. Well, the back porch was starting to twist to the point where I thought Maddie was going to fall on his head because the scab was coming apart. So I'm like, why don't I just get a single piece? Why do I need to scab the damn thing in if I can? Home Depot, they didn't even talk to me. I wanted a 30-foot 6x6. With the dried with floor, ground contact, so it'll never rot. They looked at me like I had four heads. I called all around Chicago. I called Menards. They go, oh, no, we got a couple in our warehouse in wherever the hell it is, somewhere in Wisconsin. We'll bring it down to you. And they did. And we put those up. And I'll tell you what, that thing's never coming down with single pieces. And, the other people wouldn't even talk to me. They don't know. Once you're over 18 feet, we that's why you're supposed to scab them together. Well, I don't want to scab them together. Anyway, Russell, we had a competing professor on yesterday.
No. You guys keep cheating. Yeah. I move out of state, and you just start cheating on me.
Well, we did. We were talking about you, and he kept saying, where that guy? Actually, he was very jealous of what you're doing because he – what school is it?
Westminster College in Utah?
Yeah, and he is an economics professor. They don't really have the same business school like you. You're like more in the business school, and he's very jealous.
Some schools have econ more in the liberal arts space.
Well, that's what I took at Notre Dame. Notre Dame had business economics and liberal arts economics.
Mm-hmm.
But he was amazingly jealous. We were telling about your thesis and this types of stuff, and he goes, "They're not doing anything like that." Matter of fact, he's an econometrics guy. I mean, here's a guy, we can tell something about Hal out of school. Wasn't he originally in North Carolina, Maddie? And they offered him tenure, He didn't like the way the department was going. He said, basically, screw you guys, I'm moving to Utah. Now, I would think the tenure at his age, I mean, I think he's younger than you are, Russell, don't you think, Manny?
I would say similar age, yeah.
But he's got, his triplets are what, 4 years old?
I don't know. I would say older than that.
Well, five? I mean,
Chief, I know you need a little reminder on this one, but you can be like my age and your partner can't have children.
That's true.
What do you like, the Civil War guy who was 75 and he had three kids with a 20-year-old girl?
Oh, my gosh. No, that's about the last thing. I just want, you know what, I'm already, and I'm 53, I already would rather take a nap than hang out with a 25-year-old female.
not to mention
three
babies.
I've already reached that point. Would you like to go to the movies with this attractive young lady, or would you like to take a nap? Oh, my God. Nap with the dog.
Well, how would you like triplets?
Oh, my God. See, that's why I would want to stay away from the 25-year-old girl right now.
Yes. That's but anyway, that's, he was...
I love my children. I love my 15- and 16-year-old daughters, and they are the perfect age for me at my stage of life.
Well, if ever there was a connection in geography, Hal would love to meet you because he loves the stuff you're working on.
Okay.
Yeah, we talked about your dissertation that you told us about, predicting earnings and stuff like that based on stocks, and he was fascinated.
I am more... His name's Hal?
Hal Snar.
Okay. I will look Hal up and connect with him.
So what do you make of these? Well, Chicago's going back to masks on Friday, which is insanity. But
I know.
In my opinion, but since A, they don't work, and B, whatever. But let's not go into that. But the economy is, we had retail sales numbers yesterday, which disappointed. Now, Hal did not know the answer to this, so we're asking you. Do they have an inflation adjustment in the retail sales number? I don't know.
The retail sales number, they do not.
So
they
if the used car prices go up 10% in a month, and the used car sales are up 3%, they're actually down 8.
I know in the past, and I, because I used to cover retail, so I get all fired up when people start talking about it. But when you would take a look at an entity like CarMax, and they would, you know, talk about their version of same store sales, sometimes they would benefit from, you know, an increase in prices. And, I got so yes, inflation will benefit, because it's a dollar over dollar thing.
Okay. And so,
yeah.
What
and as far as you know, we've been talking about the used car thing. I got an unsolicited. I'm now getting little pop up ads because I like looking at cars. So my phone knows that, and I often get on Instagram, you know, a local car dealership trying to, you know, show me all the different used Porsches they have or whatever, just because I like looking at cars.
Midlife crisis car.
I am now getting an unsolicited thing on Instagram, a little Instagram ad, asking me if I would like to sell my car to CarMax.
Interesting.
Audrey's cousin owns a used car.
And the
lot.
Funny thing is I do want to get rid of my car. I don't need it. So I'm going to go through that process at some point today to fill out the little thing online and see what they offer me for my car.
Well, do me a favor. If you're going to do that, talk to Audrey's cousin. He might want to buy it. He's got like three cars.
You might want to buy it?
He's got like three cars in his lot. He said people from other used car lots come and pay the list price for cars on his lot.
Yeah.
So it's never happened in the
40
years.
That's really where I was going with all this is the car that I have, I got a 5 Series BMW about a few months ago because I thought I was going to need it for being at University of Indiana, but it turns out I'm going to live within walking distance of work, and I just don't need a car down there. I don't, and I'm not going to drive back and forth.
But how are you going to get back and forth?
I'm either going to fly or take a... There's a shuttle that leaves from Union Station that takes you to different points in Indiana every day. So I'm going to do that because I hate that long drive.
But now I've
got a 5 Series BMW that I really don't need. And I'm just going to get... And then the auto insurance bill came yesterday, and I don't know why I'm paying more than my 16-year-old is, who has a pretty nice car as well. So
why would you be paying
it's
more?
It's time to get rid of that car. So I am
sounds like this car
price,
is worth quite a bit.
But I can tell you that the car that I bought 3 or 4 months ago, I probably will end up selling it to the dealership for more than I paid for it.
Probably. I will caution you this, though. If you drive down 159th Street, there's a gazillion car places. Most of them that without a whole hell of a lot of cars. They all have some. The guy who's got a boatload of them is the BMW Volkswagen guy. He's loaded.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought you had to go to Bloomington like 2 days a week and needed a car for that.
I do. There's a way I don't have to drive, so I'm going to do it without driving.
You're going to jog?
I've written. I love sitting. I don't mind taking an extra hour to get somewhere if I'm not the one behind the wheel. Right. And one of the books I wrote, I 100% wrote it on a metro train.
Really?
I'm
going
with
back
you.
And forth. Yeah, I mean, that time is unbelievable for me.
I'm with you 100%. When I'm on the train every day, I read. I get things done if I need to. When you're sitting in traffic, you literally can't do anything. It's awful.
Yeah, it was.
And it's stressful, too.
People are shooting.
I've made the life decision that I'm going to. And actually, it's kind of funny. When I was on my road trip with my daughter over the last couple of weeks, I was looking for directions from Louisville to Nashville. Like, what's the quickest way to get there? And I accidentally used my map, and it told me for $280, Uber would have taken me from Louisville to Nashville.
And you considered it.
I was like, look, honey, we could do a road trip. I've been really fascinated with if I can find an Uber that'll take me up to Lake Geneva or something.
So what are you going to do when you're home? You're just going to steal a kid's car?
Well, first off, stealing the kid's car, it would infer that she earned the money and bought the car and that it's in her name.
Excellent point.
Is really mine that she calls hers when I need it.
I'm going to speculate that if she was sitting here in the studio with Stocks and Jacks, I would say, by the way, whose car is that? It would be mine.
She would tread lightly on that one. I don't mind her calling it her car, but her mom doesn't. You know, her mom's like, you two were, because we were sharing that car for a little while. Until I got my own.
Oh God, I would never. I couldn't share a car with Audrey.
See, I had to buy my own car.
I wasn't going anywhere, guys. When I would come see you guys, I'd take the train. There was a specific train that would get me there a little bit early, so I could go buy you coffee.
If Audrey and I shared a car, that relationship would last a week. You moved the seat on me. Where's my lipstick? Bud, what is all this crap in here? What do you mean all this crap? All this mail? What do you need all this stuff for? What's doing in your car? It would last about 4 days. We'd be out. Just saying.
You know, to I would actually be the one that was trashing the car more than she does. She takes immaculate care of it.
That's all I am. My car's spotless.
Yeah.
Her uncle was interesting story about it. He owned Ed Johnson Oldsmobile, right? Until there was no more Oldsmobiles. And every year, he's one of these old-time guys. He never had a car in his lot that he didn't fully pay for. He never borrowed a dime from GMAC. And so whenever they would constantly threaten him, because that's how General Motors made their money, if most people don't know that, is the float of the dealership lot. Because GMAC made the money. They made more money than that than they did selling cars. So he would, and the weird part was, they would constantly threaten to take away his dealership because he didn't borrow any money from them. Yet at least once or twice a year, they would call him and say, Ed, would you do us a favor? We'll pay you as a consultant. Will you go out to see Matty Weber's dealership in, like, Idaho and help him out because he's about ready to go under? And, of course, whenever he went out there, the reason why he was going to go under was he'd borrowed too much money. So first thing he did was cut back on the loans to General Motors. But in other words, they wanted you to borrow as much as you could. But as soon as you were going to go under, they didn't care if you didn't eat. But if you're going to go under, they'd send somebody out to save the place. The world is a beautiful place, isn't it, Russell? Speaking of which, what's going on with this market here? We've got COVID coming back. We've got 10,000 hotel rooms that got canceled in Chicago last week because evidently a bunch of stuff got canceled. We had a little bit of a turn down in the market yesterday. Obviously, it doesn't seem like it's spilling over today, although we're not up. I'm getting really, really nervous on some of these stocks that are a couple hundred times earnings. I don't have that huge amount of nervousness on the regular market. And if it corrects 5 or 10%, it's up that much. It's not the end of the world. But some of these other ones, I just get this really odd feeling that their stocks are trading for 300 that I wouldn't buy at 30. And it, but I also know what kind of carnage that caused in 2000 when Cisco did go from 65 where it wasn't worth to 650 where it probably was worth. I mean, it took a lot of, there's a lot of skeletons along the way. And I don't really want that to happen, but I don't know. Is there a way around it? Can we grow into it? Or, because it doesn't look like we're growing very fast. Retail sales were horrible yesterday.
How much longer do you think the internet bubble would have gone if the Fed kept trying to prop it up? I mean, that one was not really being propped up by anything other than true bubble hype. What we're dealing with now is a little bit of bubble hype, but also playing with a safety net.
I'm going to say you got to the point now where you anticipate me saying something before I even say it. I'm going to say that there was a little bit of the Fed in there because it just happened to coincide with Y2K.
They were providing just in case because of the they were trying to the. For people that don't know, because there are hopefully there are people that weren't even around when we flipped over from 1999 to 2000 listening, because we're very educational.
Yes.
But the Y2K thing was there was this fear that some of the, you know, that much like we're having glitches in the regular old supply chain, that we would end up with glitches in the cyber supply chain, or however you want to put it, and maybe some banks would shut down, ATMs wouldn't work for a little while. I don't know about you two, but I do remember loading up on, I think I had about $2,000 in cash on me just in case.
Yeah, me too.
Just to make sure that I could get, you know, from day to day in my bachelor lifestyle back then. I probably had $2,000 probably lasted a week and a half.
Plus we had a
Why you don't give young stupid guys cash?
We rented a place down in Michigan City that was pretty good size and had that New Year's Eve down there with enough booze and enough food where the next day you couldn't do anything. It really wouldn't have mattered. we were pretty much sleeping anyway. But let's talk about this more when we come back, because it was actually a fascinating topic. But I'm going to say the last 6 months of the dot-com boom, the last 6 months and probably the last 15% of the market was fueled by the Y2K money. It was just like today. Fed was pouring money into the economy to solve all these problems, of course, that they're never going to solve. And yet, the stock market ballooned. Where right now, they're pouring money in the economy, allegedly because Matty Weber hasn't gotten a raise, yet he still hasn't gotten a raise, and the market goes to the moon. I mean, by this time, they must know where that money's going to go, Russell, and they know it's not going to go where they tell us they think it's going to go. Just saying. S&P futures down 5, NASDAQ futures down 6. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks Radio Show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and a good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP futures down 475. NASDAQ futures down 5. Dow futures down 78. Individual stocks. Lows, they were down like $9 yesterday. In sympathy with Home Depot getting down like 16, but now their earnings came out and they're back up 729. So, they got a better news out of their stuff than Home Depot. We've got Target is down 480. But the stock's still 250, which has been up every day, so not much of a pause there. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 6, call that flat. FTSE down 22.3%, CAC around down 34.5%. In Asia, a little bit of a bounce back. Nikkei up 161.6%. They were down like over a percent yesterday. Shanghai was down 2% yesterday. They're back up 1.1. It's 38 points. Hang Seng up 121.5%. So somewhat of a bounce there. The wave review yesterday, Dow was down 282 after being down, I think, in 500. S&P down 31 after being down by 55-ish at least. NASDAQ down 137 after being down in the mid-2s, I saw it. Bonds, now it's up 1 basis point to 1.27. The Bund minus 1 basis point to minus 0.48. Japan is hugging right the zero line, 0.006. It sounds like, what's his name's grade point average, Bluto? In a animal house, right? 0.00. 7 years of college down the drain. Oil up 51 cents, 67.10. Brent up 70 cents, 69.73. Whole number trying to get back to $70 on the Brent. Natural gas up a penny, 3.84. RBOB up 1 cent, 2.17. Gold up 3.20 down to 17.91. Silver up 7 cents, 23.73. Copper down 4 cents, 4.16. Platinum up 50 cents, 9.94. And crypto, Bitcoin down 600 to 44,898. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. One crash in the area, that's out in the western suburbs, Naperville area, on the Reagan I-88. Inbound side, just before Raymond Drive, there was a crash, so expect some stop-and-go traffic and delays as you're coming inbound on I-88 from the western suburbs. That's the only crash in the area. That earlier rollover crash on the Bishop Ford at 159th has been cleared. Still some resulting congestion from that, but that overturned vehicle that was on fire about an hour ago has been cleared. So Bishop Ford is back open on the southbound side. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Heavy traffic on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but nothing out of the ordinary there. Same for the Tri-State I-294. In the south suburbs. There was a couple of earlier stalled vehicles blocking the right lane. Those have been cleared, but a lot of congestion on 294. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, clouds early, sunshine this afternoon, a very pleasant day, high of 82. Right now it's overcast and 75 degrees downtown.
For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 94 today. Right now it's clear and 84. In sports, White Sox shut out the A's last night down at Guaranteed Rate. 9-0 was the final. A's number one starter Chris Bassitt left the game after taking a line drive to the face in the second inning, just under his eye. He was never unconscious, so that was good news, but it was very scary, and he was carted off, and we'll learn more about his condition today, but he appears to be okay, but a scary moment in that game.
Maddie, with a metal bat, he'd be dead.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Cubs ended their 12-game losing streak, beating the Reds behind Kyle Hendricks 2-1 last night in Cincinnati. Diamondbacks topped the Phillies 3-2.
Russell, would you mind if I... What you just said, by the way, your question you just asked is the one I've been trying to get the answer to, and you are the professor, but let me set it up a little differently. Back in 99, and we're using that as an example, the Fed poured a lot of money in, not as much as they do or did now, but they poured a lot of money in for Y2K reasons. And one of these days when we have time, I'll tell the story of Y2K and how many chips there were everywhere in the world, including phone sets and everything else, that people had no idea what the coding was. And the idea was that it only went to 99, and then when it flipped over, what would happen? It would go to year zero instead of 2000, and that was the fear, right, Russell, pretty much?
And, yeah, exactly.
So after that didn't happen in January, the Fed basically said, look, we got all this money we poured in the system, and the market just was skyrocketing. And we only put the money in there for a reason, and now the reason is over. The problem didn't occur. By the way, we're going to start sucking the money back out. So
yep.
I'm going to say, Russell, that there were stocks that were worth 5 that had been trading 80. Fed pours the money in. They're now 130 or something. Margin interest, margin debt is to the sky. Stuff starts coming down. It's non-sustainable, and it collapses down to the 5, not just back to the 80 where it was from the Fed. And now we see somewhat of the same phenomenon. But the Fed this time, instead of saying, you know, look at the money we don't need in the system anymore, let's drag some of it out, they're saying we need the money to keep going because we need to prop up the market and other things. And Russell's question is absolutely the zillion-dollar question. What would have happened in 2000 if somebody in the Fed said, well, yeah, we don't need it anymore. Look what we've done to the market. Look how rich, I'm going to be an ass here and say, look how rich our friends have become. Because they're the people who really control us, and they don't want their stocks going down. Let's keep it up. Let's just keep pouring money in so it never goes down. Question is, how long, maybe forever, maybe we would still be sustained, would that have worked? And that's what people are asking right now. Every time things start to go down, we print up another $1 trillion and send in a system. Is there a limit to this that every other economist, you know, since Da Vinci, has thought there was a limit? These guys don't seem to think there is. If they keep pushing in there, it just will never end. The party will never end. And now the question Russell asked, what would have happened in 2000? If they would just kept doing that, would the market never have crashed? Would we never have had a dot-com crash? Would those companies that would be out of business, would they still be trading 400? I mean, that answer your own question, Russell. What is the answer?
Oh, I think they probably would have held it up for an extra 3 or 4 months, but... spending there was all these internet companies expanded tremendously, and they bought stuff from Cisco, which you often cite. I mean, the way that I knew it was going to crash, I visited a distributor, and the EMC was the big drive maker for all the internet companies, and their orders had halted. They had nothing coming through there. So I do think that, the internet companies would have been hit pretty hard, because they just were not generating any cash. And nobody was giving them any more money. I think maybe people would have given them more money for another quarter or two, but it just would have made the situation in the end worse than it already was.
No, but is that...
But that's a guess. You never really know.
Well, in any kind of economic theory or parlance, nobody can disagree with your answer. But what if I were to say the Fed goes... Yeah, Russell, try selling that stock. Here's money I just printed up. I'm gonna try go short it. I'll stick it where the sun don't shine. Try selling your bonds at 1% interest rate. I'm gonna buy them from you and make you the sorriest man on earth. That's what we're doing now. There's no end to it.
Well, the big difference now versus back then is there were a, and we just don't really have this situation, but there were a lot of companies that went public much earlier than they should have in the whole normal life cycle of businesses. They didn't really need the cash that they were getting when they sold shares, other than to, you know, make some of the management really rich. They weren't using that cash to expand themselves very much. Plus, you had some terrible businesses that were, I mean, come on, for goodness sake, pets.com, yeah, it's where you can, yeah, it's like a niche of Amazon where you only buy stuff for your dog.
Okay.
That's not a viable long-term business.
All right, so.
And those things were whereas the companies that are being awarded these really large valuations right now, you know, Tesla will grow into, or they'll end up getting absorbed by another automaker, but Tesla will grow into the valuation. The valuation's just way ahead of the fundamentals right now. And you could say that for, you know, several other, you know, same thing for Amazon, eBay, a bunch of those other companies. They've got a really large valuation right now. Over a long period of time, they're viable businesses that will continue to be around. That wasn't true of the internet bubble. The internet bubble had a lot of companies that were, you know, they had created a valuation metric based on how often people visited their site, not how much revenue they were bringing in, because they weren't bringing in any revenue.
I can't argue with you on the companies that you just named.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to say that if we thought about it, because I have one of my guys at one of the places that I do some business with, he sends me a list of all these stocks that I never heard of that are, like, first thing I do is I kick them up and they're trading like 260. And then I look at where I think they would be worth and they're like 20. I mean, they have no book value, they have no sales, they're 400 times earnings if there's any earnings in there, and oh, by the way, they're like 100 times sales. And my view is, I don't know anything about any of them, Russell, but I'll tell you this. If all 20 or 50 or 100 of them grow into their stock price, the GDP's got to triple. I mean, there's no way they can all grow into their stock price. Now, I don't know which ones will and which ones won't. I wish I did. And I think I'm with you on the Amazon and some of the other ones. They'll be around, obviously. But if you took 20 of them, I'm not so sure it's that much different than the dot-com era. I mean, I mean, how does Zoom, for instance? Everybody knows the name. Okay. Mm-hmm. Last year was their best year ever. And maybe the best year they're ever going to have if we ever get rid of this COVID thing. And the thing is at a price where they need to like quadruple just to be close. And I don't know if I see that happening, because now it's good enough business where there's competitors showing up. This is America. I mean, they're not going to be there forever. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not telling anybody to sell it, because it's probably going to go up in my face. But I'm just saying there's a lot of them like that. But the question comes down again is, what if, I mean, right now the Fed has to feel that at $1 trillion a year, it's kind of getting a little much.
Yeah. And I think they're starting to float hints that maybe they're going to scale it back.
You know what the scale is that I was reading in the last few days? Maybe you're doing too much traveling. You know what the scale is? The Steve Leisman gang on CNBC, and I just started reading some of the stuff. They're buying $130 billion a month, 80 of its U.S. treasuries, to the point where you can't even look at the interest rates and say, the market feels this. Whenever I hear somebody say that, and again, tell me I'm wrong, I think this is way too strong. They're a freaking idiot. The market is the Fed. I mean, you can't.
They totally are the Fed. Yeah.
I mean, you can't talk about the tips market, which is the inflation stuff. Mm-hmm. You can't talk about what the tips market is telling you when the Fed owns 40% of the tips, right? I mean, because it's telling you nothing.
It's not a real market.
And
beyond that, they've been buying non-government securities.
Yeah. So
they even buy the ETFs that buy bonds.
Right. So the story is
completely different than anything they've ever done before.
Well, is my math right here? The 130 a month, 80 billion of that allegedly is treasury securities, and 50 is non-treasury. God knows what it is. Could be mortgages. Could be anything.
So that's $2.5 billion a day.
Yeah. So now we're talking the cutting back
for the non-treasury.
Yeah, and then we're cutting back each of them by $5 million a month. That's the taper. And the story is, in the press anyway, that after 6 months, that will fix everything and we can go back to the $130 a month. Russell, if you're a student who wrote that, I'm going to say there's a big red F on that paper. What are they even talking about? To go from 130 to 120 for 6 months, that's the cure for what exactly? That's like telling a 500-pound blimp that he should lose 1 pound for only for like a week and go back up to 500.
And then his chance of heart disease goes down.
Yeah. I mean, how is that even a taper?
Why is that even a viable idea?
It's not a taper. It's a pimple on the ass of an elephant is what it is.
Well, and what you just said is why they would say something like that. It's a pimple on the ass of the elephant, so I shouldn't sell my stocks.
Well, I guess, yeah.
I mean, because they want to make sure, you know, everything is hunky-dory. And they totally overemphasize the paying attention to what's going on with the stock market, because in reality, after doing a drive around the middle of nowhere for a couple of weeks and being reminded that the America is a lot more than big cities, most people don't. I think a majority of people are not impacted by the stock market.
I would agree with you. Well, they have. To the extent they have a 401k, they are.
Yeah, I don't think as many people have 401ks as you think.
Well, I think most people have an IRA, I can't imagine anybody. You don't think so?
If you're barely making your bills month to month, you sure don't have an IRA.
That's true.
You know, yeah. I've got and this is the person that I, you know, my poor younger sister, because I've got two half sisters and one young sister, and I'll guarantee you, none of the three have an IRA.
Well, I'll concede you this. Professor, since you are the professor, mm-hmm. I'm going to say that my number of people who have an IRA will make me right. But if you look at it and say how many people made at least a 60% contribution in the last 4 years, I'm going to say you're totally right and I'm wrong. In terms of
the other part is you can have an IRA, but
yeah,
you know,
I'm going to say
have not put money into it.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised if even your sister might actually have one she forgot about. But there's probably nothing.
No, she doesn't, because she was part of the big road trip over the last couple of weeks, and she actually is in a place where she has a little bit of extra money, and I started trying to help her with that.
Good for you.
She does not have. Well, I would rather her save her own money than come and ask me for money.
What's the commercial now? Is life all about helping other people get through it? And there's some truth to that.
Teaching someone how to fish instead of giving them fish.
Yep.
That's what I am trying to do.
Yeah, but what if you're a guy like me who really wants to see the fish all cleaned up and ready to fry, and I'm ready to fry it, but I don't really want to catch them all clean up. The chopping the head off and gutting them, I'm out on that.
Yeah, I'm with you. My brother does that.
You've got to work harder then.
Yeah, and I have no interest in that. I mean, I don't even want to kill a worm by sticking a poor guy in the hook. I'm not even a worm guy, so it's just not one of those dudes. You won't see me field dressing a deer.
You're not going to shoot a deer in the woods?
No, and then
drag it to your truck,
You're like Tony Soprano. You've got no empathy whatsoever for people, but you worry about the animals.
No, I haven't. I'm like that. Yeah, I'm sort of like that. I mean, I'm going to guess. If you're sick or one of your dogs sick, which way does your wife go?
Oh, definitely this poor puppy. Right?
Oh yeah, without
question. Without a doubt, right?
Without a doubt. Yeah. Maddie or Venkman, what's the choice, man?
I agree, 100%. She's going with the dog.
I mean, there's with Audrey, who's animal crazed. We're talking about a girl who stopped her car with the flashing lights to rescue a goose in the middle of a highway. if it was me lying there, she wouldn't do it. You know? And so she's. And by the way, she did nurse the poor goose back to health.
She didn't need it. That's good.
Oh yeah, and then she let him go. But he was running around the garage without even feeding him. Those guys have an amazing digestive system, so we say. Poor guy, he must have pooped 5 times in the 3 hours she was nursing him back to health without her even feeding him. they are machines. So
it would not be to that extreme here.
No, but. No, she rescued a bird like last month. It was in the middle of the bird landed on the asphalt and he couldn't pick his feet up. So she went down and freed his feet. What would her car block in traffic? And then brought him in her car, went home, took and cleaned his feet off, and then he flew away. This is what I'm dealing with. Anyway, so what? Do you think? What has to happen? You're asking the question that I'm asking. What happens if they keep doing this? And we're gonna
inflate our way into it.
All right, so. If it's 3 years from now and you and I are still doing the show.
Not to the extreme point, but it's the Germany thing back, you know, in the 30s.
Weimar.
2030s. Where, you know, they just kept printing money.
But if you want to.
Eventually, if you print money, people are going to need more of that money to buy things.
All right, so if you go on CNBC tomorrow, the first thing one of the very attractive either ladies or good looking guys that are on there is going to say to you, Mr. Rhodes, Professor Rhodes, by the way, are you Dr. Rhodes yet?
No.
This year? This month?
Very, very close.
All right. So, Professor, not
I would say next month.
Well, you're at least a doctor as far as Dr. J is.
Sure.
All right. So, Professor, first thing they're going to say to you is, well, with this prediction you have, they can't keep doing this forever. It sure looks like they've gotten away with it so far. What's the problem? Is the first question you're going to get, and you're going to sit there and say. Okay, I know there's a cliff somewhere between here and Oregon, walking from Chicago, but it's still there, but we haven't gotten it yet. What makes you think it's there? We haven't gotten it yet. What's the number? We're now up to 8.5 trillion. Is it 9.5? Is it 12.5? Is it 50.5?
I think it's a combination of circumstances where you get where the you got to have the fundamentals of the companies get hit hard enough that regardless of what kind of cash is being pumped in there, money's not going to the company. So it's not just the one factor you're throwing out there, which is, you know, how much we're going to reach a point where the money's going to have nowhere else to go.
Well, the amount of cash in some people's hands right now is so dramatic, and the debtclock.org, which now gives you like every stat on earth. Average family savings in the last, I'm going to say, probably 2 years since they started winging money at people for COVID, has gone from like 5,000 to over 50. But now I can't get a median number on that. I'm going to say the median number is probably 8. But some people have so much dough. I was talking to somebody last night. I won't say the name of the bar she works at. And she says the nighttime there has gotten so brutal because some of the people in the drug trade and everything hang out there. The fistful of hundreds these people have, she goes, I've never seen so much money.
Which bar is this?
I'll tell you later. It's because people know the name. But I'm saying some of these places, and you have a government that, you know, whether it's Republican, Democrat, I'm going to say one of the single biggest bleep-ups in the history of our government were these PPP loans. Because, and I'll be straight out, we got a very small one for PTI. We didn't qualify for any of the rest. The first one we did. But our revenue didn't go down very much, so we didn't qualify for the second one. But we were shut down. I mean, we had bridges up here. We couldn't get people to work. We had people at home. We could barely service our customers. We did only because, you know, I found a bridge I could get in here from by the post office. But it was a massive hardship. And by the way, everybody else is getting the dough. I'm going to say there is no trailer on this. There's no audit that if PTI got $500,000, which we didn't come anywhere near that, but if we'd have gotten $500,000, all we had to do, Russell, is prove for forgiveness. My brother should be saying this, not me, because he knows more about it. I think we had to prove to them that we gave out 75-80% of that in salary.
Okay.
Now, the first question is going to pop into your head is, okay, we did this to save people. I could have, say PTI had 500 people, I could have laid off 400 and paid myself all the dough. It was just salary.
I think there are people that did that.
Yeah, I think there are too. And I mean, why doesn't anybody in the world, everybody, even Professor Hale yesterday, was ragging about These people sitting home and not going back to work and getting the unemployment. Why doesn't anybody, when a restaurant owner comes out and says that, why doesn't anybody flash next to the guy's lying mouth? By the way, you received $2 million or $4 million in PPP to keep these people on. Why do you need to hire anybody? Well, it's because I laid all those people off and I took the dough. Well, that would diffuse the argument. Why are people having trouble hiring people when they got money to keep them?
Well, because
I'm not saying it's a little extreme.
And my sister was in the situation where she had a loyalty thing where she's been working with the same guy forever and ever and ever and ever. But she could have just as easily sat home and brought home about the same amount of money.
But she paid it. But he paid her. Right, he didn't say go home and I'll take the dough, because they're not saying the question wasn't on the thing. Oh, by
he
the way,
he paid her and she got government checks too.
Right, but okay, but what I'm saying is they didn't say to my brother when we got ours forgiven, our minuscule loan forgiven. They didn't say, oh, by the way, you did it for salaries, but did you keep everybody? That wasn't on there. There's some churches, you know, and let's not go into it. I got a couple seconds.
I've seen that. Actually, a church across the street from me was on one of the lists.
But they'll sell you how much money they got, and then they'll say how many employees, and the number is zero. As soon as they got the check, they get rid of everybody. I mean, what are we doing? I mean, that's why I'm going to say it's the biggest change in wealth between some people and other people we've seen since the 1929, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely a gigantic divergence.
Anyway, Russell, thank you very much. If you sell a Beamer, you know, maybe one of the listeners want to give you a big bid on that. If I were you, why don't you go get a pickup truck just to drive around? You'd fit in much better in Indiana if you had one.
I'm getting a motorcycle.
Oh, God.
Now we're talking.
I don't want to.
Yeah!
As Dr. J's dad used to call them, donor cycles. I don't want you doing that.
Yep. Well, my wife calls it, too, but... She said, "Now that I'm fit, that she's had me long enough, I can do whatever I want."
But you know what? You're not a drinker,
talk to you guys next week.
Somebody might actually want you. Somebody might actually want your liver. You're not a drinker.
That's true.
I don't know about yours or mine, Maddie. What do you think?
Yeah, mine. They'll pass on mine.
S&P futures down 7. S&P futures down 16. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.